everybody. And thank y'all also very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale, and joining me as always, fighting the heat, Mr. Kyle Felsat.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios enjoying a nice beverage.
Yes.
I have today.
What did you bring in?
Liquid Death Grim Leafer. It's an iced tea with agave and vitamins, because I like my vitamins.
You got some agave in that cup?
Yeah, I like it, man. I like the tea.
Grim Leafer. That's not where I thought the Grim Leafer was going. We used to buy some bud off a dude in school we called the Grim Leafer, wasn't
it? That's true. Yeah. Well, probably shouldn't have said that on the air, but yeah.
Hey, that was a long time ago. Wasn't even that good.
No, man, I just got back from vacation. Me and the family went down to Crystal Beach, which is next, it's between Galveston and Port Arthur. We go down there every year. Had a great time. Me and my wife got to go in a helicopter and tour the island from the air. I've never done that. I've never been in a helicopter before. It's pretty cool. I kept having like Apocalypse Now flashbacks. I was playing the song in my my earbuds and stuff. It was pretty cool. And all I could think was, man,
wished I had a pilot's license.
Wish I had a helicopter.
Yeah.
I already told my wife, I know what I'm getting. I'm getting an MD-500.
So now you're going to be a helicopter pilot now.
Oh, I'd like to.
Go back and do it. That way I can hang out the side and shoot pigs while you fly around.
That would be very cool. No, I didn't get to buy a helicopter. I had to painstakingly buy a new car for my wife.
Oh, yeah.
We almost had the other one paid off. I mean, like literally like three payments left. I was so excited. We're going to be saving all that money. I could use it for toys for myself or trips or whatever.
And
she got in a big wreck and totaled the car.
Sadly, she survived.
That's a joke, folks. I had to get her another one. So now I got to start the payments all over again. Yay! Great. Adulting is fun, right?
Awesome.
Just when you think you're going to get out of it, you get right back in. Yep, that's the way it goes. But
well, for those that have listened for a long time, you know that Kyle and I don't quit on vehicles. Right, like our vehicles are old.
My wife always has a relatively new one, but yeah,
I'll drive. That's what I do with my wife, but not mine.
No, my previous truck, I had it for like 20 years.
Mine's an 01, baby.
Yeah.
I'm not getting a new one. It still runs like a champ. Everything works great, and I own it.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not buying another one.
Yeah, that's my other car out there. That thing's garbage. Now, I do say it's handy when you're having a 16-year-old or two learning how to drive. They get to drive the beater. Of course,
that's right.
Oh, man, when do I get to drive the new one? I'm like, you're not driving anything that has payments on it.
Here's what you need to tell them the same thing I told my son. You can drive all that once you turn 25. Mm. Once your insurance goes down, I'll be happy to let you drive it.
Right. Well,
but prior to that, no. And if it's four-wheel drive, you're not even allowed to get in it. Thank you.
And I always see these parents, they buy like these 16-year-olds brand new cars. And I'm like, dude, you know that's just an accident waiting to happen. Because everybody, when you're learning, is going to make a couple mistakes, right?
Well, not everybody got to bodge our cars off in a field.
Yeah. Well, my parents did. We didn't have the money as a kid to get a new car. Nobody in our whole family had a new car.
Well, because we treated them the way we treated them.
True. True. But no, I got back from my vacation. I had a good time. The kids are about to start school. They're kind of bummed out that the summer went by so fast. It did go by fast, but
I wish it would go by faster. I'm hot.
Man, I'm telling you, it has been
brutal.
Terrible. When you're about to go out of town now, right?
Yeah.
Where are you going?
We're fixing me and my wife. It's way more fun. Of course, all of those that don't have children or their children are grown. It's a good time when it's just you and your partner can just slip off anytime you want. We're going to go up to the mountains. I wasn't even planning on going anywhere. And my wife was like, look, we need to go up where it's cooler. She wants to run up. So we're going back to Pagosa for a little bit, not very long, just to run up for a quick, to try to cool off a little bit. And then we're going to come back just in time to make a one-day pit stop at the ReaperCon.
Yep.
And then we're going to hit what? The Paranormal Roundtable. We're going to go slide over there.
Yeah, the Cryptid Conference.
And we get to go to the Cryptid Conference. We're going to talk Dog Man.
Yeah, I know several people that have already messaged me telling me that they're going to be up there. So I can't wait to meet y'all.
Oh, yeah.
Or anyone else out there?
We got friends coming from here too. I got a bunch of our buddies that are here in Weatherford are going to end up going too.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, there's several of those that are like, oh yeah, I want to go check that out, especially because it's close. So dude, it'll be fun. And if y'all are on the fence about going, hey, look, come hang out. Food's good. Hey, you won't be cold. I'll tell you that. I mean, you can come down and get plenty of sun. It'll be plenty nice and warm. if you want to come sweat a little bit, it'll be down here. It'll probably be 106 by the time it rolls
up. The three amigos will be there: Lyle Blackburn, Ken Gerhardt, and Nick Redfern. They go everywhere together.
That's right. And they're trouble. So, yeah, if you want to come meet those guys, we can introduce you. They're a lot of fun. Those dudes are a good time.
Speaking of fun.
Oh, no, I've got something that's not fun, but go ahead. What do you got?
I was going to start with a cool story.
Oh, lay it on me, because I got one I want to freak you out with. Okay. So go ahead and go.
Check this out. This is pretty cool. This happened back in June of 2016. It says, a while back, I was working as a courier for a company. My duties included picking up specimens from the hospital. One morning, while I was driving, after picking up specimens from the hospital, I noticed that there was a car going in the opposite direction. The car only had one visible person driving the car. She had curly, wet, brown hair, with both of her hands on the steering wheel at the 10 and 2 o'clock position. Wish my kid would learn that. We crossed each other's paths, going in the opposite directions, and now we as drivers are parallel to each other. She is on my left side, while I am also on her left side. Something, I don't know what, made me turn and look, and things suddenly went in slow motion. I saw a person sitting next to her who wasn't there before. It looked like a woman with very dark hair, pale white skin, and dark eye sockets. When we went past each other, I thought, wow, that's weird. I need to make a U-turn and take a second look. So I stopped at the nearest light. I made a U-turn, and right when I did, now the passenger is on the other side of the street. And when the drivers are parallel to each other, things went in slow motion. The passenger with pale white skin with the very dark hair turned and looked at the driver, but I think she was looking at me. She still doesn't have any eye sockets. That's what's weird. Just big, open, gaping holes. She opened her mouth, and all I saw was total darkness. Somehow, it felt as though she were sucking my soul. The slow motion broke, and I resumed driving off, almost crashing into traffic. Reality then hit me. I thought about it. I just saw something I should not have. Question is, what the heck was that thing? Well, I don't have any answers for you. Some kind of La Reina or some kind of ghost spirit or something was in the car with her. I don't know. Very interesting story. Cam, have you heard of anything similar to that?
No, but it makes me think about the clip from Constantine when he was a little boy and he turns around on the bus.
Mm.
Remember, and that old woman, no, like, is that... with that crate? That's what it makes me think of.
It's been a hot minute since I've seen that movie.
Man, you need to change that.
I wasn't a big fan of that movie.
Oh, you can leave.
Oh, okay.
But there's the door.
Oh, okay.
Go on now.
No, I'm not a big fan of Constantine. I think I'm not smart enough to comprehend what's going on, so I lose focus, right? Like, after, like, 30, 45 minutes, I'm like, I don't even know what's going on in this movie.
Here's the reason I liked it, is I like it anytime you take something like that and, like, twist the church into it, to where it, of course, what's always the joke you see online is you're like, why did the demons all of a sudden, after all of these languages over all these years, just decide Latin's the one they're going to stick with?
Yeah, I don't know. Right? Yeah. I think it just makes it creepy, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to read some kind of incantation from a book, it's cooler to do it in Latin or Aramaic or something like that.
It should be pig Latin.
If you just say it in English, it's like, oh, that's kind of lame.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? For real, kind of lame. You know what I forgot, too? Happy birthday.
Oh, thanks, man.
I forgot. The whole deal, I'm like, yeah, we got busy and we didn't post or even talk about it, and I should have brought it up. Happy birthday, you old rascal.
Thank you, man. No, I don't really celebrate my birthdays. No. I know everybody in my family wants to, and I'm like, why would I want to celebrate getting older, right? Closer to the end.
That's right.
And if I was like Benjamin Button and I was going back in time, I'd be excited. I'd be like, yeah, a couple more years, I'll be 20. But that's not the case.
Benjamin Button.
Okay, what's the story you said that was in a freak?
Okay, so we always talk about black-eyed kids, right? We always nervous about the black-eyed kids and all that. Well, now there's white-eyed kids.
Those are called cataracts.
Yeah, that's right. I got this glaucoma. Speaking of, what was it? The Grim Leafer. So here we go. It says, I was in a 24-hour shopping center car park waiting for a friend who works there at around 10 p.m. Suddenly, this kid pops up to the window screen and starts tapping. Instantly, when I hear the window screen, I think, is this in the UK? Isn't that what they call it everywhere? It's here. It's a windshield, right?
I think
over
so.
Overseas, it's a screen, a windscreen.
I'll have to ask Nick.
Which, yeah. Does he even remember that anymore? He's been here for so long. So it says this kid stops up and's like, on the window. He says, so I'm thinking, where in the hell did this kid come from? And is he trying to rob me? So anyway, I roll the window down only partially and remember that my doors are locked, so I feel a little bit safer. And I ask the kid, what do you want? Sir, I'm lost. Can you take me home? I ask, where are your parents? as it was late at night and there was no one else visible on this same floor of the car park that I was waiting on. And this was beginning to feel a little off. So the kid replies, I'm lost and I just want to go home. Now, this was definitely weird. So I look at him again, and it's then when I do a double take, because his eyes were white, not just white around the edges, but unending white through the entire eye. No iris, no pupil, just a solid wall of light. I really don't know why, but I felt myself smiling slightly as I gazed at him. Then my thoughts began to collect again, and it must have been about 3 seconds. And I said, sorry, no kid, I have to go. I immediately regretted replying. But you have to take me, the kid replied.
No, I don't.
I don't know how, but I could feel his voice more than hear it. His words began echoing in my mind longer than it should have. No, kid, I gotta go. So I start panicking. And the kid replies again, this time with something indescribable behind his voice. I'm lost, and I just want to go home. Now, I don't know how, but at this point, it was as if someone had put the kid's voice on a loudspeaker. And as he spoke, I felt it through a booming feeling that was resonating from within this child. The force of this kid's voice was so strong. It's like the Weirding voice, right? From Dune. Use the voice. I felt strongly sympathetic to this kid, almost like I was being forced to by him. Anyway, with the last ounce of control I had, I left. I turned the car on, slammed on the accelerator. The kid immediately shouted, "No, take me with you." At this point, it was as though the kid's voice was a machine gun firing into me. I immediately sped to the nearest exit in a dreamlike state and drove into the night. My friend at this point could find his own way back to the house, which he did later. While driving and exiting from the car park, I could still feel his voice within me resonating at an amplified volume. The force of his voice, it was as if I had been picked up and violently shaken by the kid whose voice was so clear, and my unconscious was analyzing every nuance and inflection of what he had said, like I was being forced to. There was so much will and force behind this voice. Anyway, after I got back to my apartment, I immediately tried to forget the whole thing. And the next day, I drive to work in the normal manner, and my friend was there, resentful that I had left, but we soon went back to good terms. See, I never did tell him or anyone else about the incident. The strangest thing did happen, however, on that same day. When I was driving back from work back to my apartment, there was a tremendous thunderstorm, and I noticed flashes, although I didn't see it, of lightning. And when I was at my apartment building, I live in a large complex, I opened a huge metal door to get in, and it was soaking wet. There was a handprint on it. I only noticed when I looked down to pull the handle at about the same height as a small child would place their hands. The handprint was white, and although the whole door was dripping with water, the handprint seemed to be made of recently dried paint. I touched it, looked up, and it felt in my hand just to make sure it was painted. And it was. And I looked down again, and the handprint within the 2 second span of me sampling it and looking up had gone from white to clear from the rain dripping on the door. So I touched it again and I felt it. It was painted, but now was completely soaked with water and far more fluid than it was before, indicating it being soaked. I looked down again and it vanished. I put my hand on where the paint had been, but there was nothing but a metal door behind it. For some reason, I looked behind me, and the child was there. No, I'm kidding. Says I looked behind me, and of course, there was no one there. So I went inside, made my way up to my apartment, and had an early evening. And I've not encountered any wide-eyed kids since, or being that of anything supernatural type at all. However, I now live a slightly more cautious life than before. I have become now more religious, and now occasionally read the Bible when I didn't really believe in God before at all. So maybe I'll go to church. I don't know. The fact is, these creatures might actually exist and are waiting for the right opportunity to strike Andrew.
That is creepy.
So a wide-eyed kid. Now, here's one thing. Maybe you just left a kid in a car park that was in trouble, bro. Maybe you just kind of panicked for a second.
Yeah, but I can't blame him. I would leave the kid, too. I'd be like, look, I'm out of here. Right. Sorry.
I don't know.
I mean, I'm not waiting to find out if this kid belongs to the Moon-Eyed people right? or any other crazy group of aliens or so, whatever this is with the glowing, or not glowing, but just solid white solid eyes. White. That's creepy. Yeah. yeah.
Again, yeah. it sounds fey.
It does. Almost.
Because my whole thing, and this is the little, look, this is the little thing I always think about when we talk about these kids or these anything in fey, is the way they address you and the way they carry on a conversation. Any child that was truly lost would be like, no, 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 wait, look, this is what's going on. My mom left me here. I was supposed to meet her here.
Right.
She's broke. And first of all, a kid walking up to a stranger is different too. That's the first thing. You're like, wait a minute. Why'd you just out of nowhere? Like you didn't go into the office. If you're waiting for a friend to work, then that means some place is probably still open.
Well, he said it was 24/7.
Exactly. So you can't go into shenanigans or whatever this place your buddy's working at. This kid could have and borrowed their phone or had somebody call the police, you know, whatever it is. But no, this kid shows up to your door and starts trying to talk you into this. It feels fake. Yeah.
And their mannerisms, like they're yes. not quite right, right? Like it feels like it's an imposter.
Yes.
Something trying. It's disguised itself to look like a child.
But I like the talk to where it felt like it was drawing him to it.
It does feel demonic to me. It feels demonic.
Because I thought about the stories that we've done, and you brought up about the leprechaun that the people had seen, and people were just throwing him money, and he was set up between the little stairwells and all that.
Yeah.
Because the music and all of that was like drawing people to it. It's the same thing with this kid's voice. It said that it shook this person to their core. Right.
Yeah.
And that they felt like he was smiling at it, like you're almost being coerced. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a second, hold up. That's the disturbing thing. But yeah, it does. It feels like they're feeding, like I've said before, off of some sort of energy, some sort of something. Good thing you didn't take it home.
I agree 100%. Speaking of creepy, what are you going to be talking about on today's show?
I'm going to be talking about, since what we had discussed a while back, and we always kick around the ideas of things that could be living in and around the caves and the cave systems in North America and around the world, right? Of things that, just some odd sightings in and around caves that may end up leading to something like that. Folks, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'll have some stories about this. Y'all listen to it, and then we'll jump back at the end of this, and we'll pick each other's brains and see what y'all think. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Please, please bear with me. Man, oh man. I don't know if it's these allergies, it's turned into something, whatever it is. I know I sound terrible. I feel awful, but what do they say? The show must go on, right? That's what we're doing. And I got fun stuff to talk to y'all about. Again, down the crazy rabbit hole of discussing, and Kyle and I have been talking off air quite a bit about it. We were kicking around the idea, of course, with just the whole cave system, right? We've talked about it. Y'all have heard us. I'm sure all of y'all have probably kicked it around in your mind or talked to it with y'all's friends too. But the idea of that being where these disappearances take place, right? These cryptids are hiding. I don't know. I just love it. I love the idea of it. Now, I'm trying to think how long it's been. It's probably been a hot minute. If y'all have been with us for any time listening or have gone back and listened, I'm sure you'll remember some of these that I'm just about to pop off on. But I'm trying to think how long. It's been a while, as I had talked about some from around the world, some different ones, some of my favorite ones. One of my favorite all-time cave cryptids, I guess you could call it, comes from South Africa. It's the Groot Slang. If you're not familiar with that, it basically is like some big rampaging serpentine elephant. If that makes sense, it's one of my faves, right? And also the Ahul, y'all probably remember that, like the big bat It's like some crazy bat down in the Java rainforest in Indonesia. And this thing flies. I think that's the name it sounds. It makes as it flies, or that's the sound it calls as it flies. There's a lot of wild stories around that. I also like the stories of the Totsilverm. Remember all of this crazy thing? It's like a lizard-looking dragon animal. There's a bunch of cool stories that go along, of course, with the caves. But like I told you, the Groot Sling's my favorite. Real quick, comes from African folklore. I believe it's Richtersveld, South Africa. Down in this area, there's a cave that's known as the Wonder Hole, or the Bottomless Pit, is what is said. And the folklore claims that it is full of diamonds, right? This is where there's diamonds. I believe the cave actually makes connection with the ocean where it's at. And it's believed, of course, you know, that's where things could come and go. But and if it is out of reach, it's always convenient. We all, as human beings, seem to make really interesting stories up of when things are out of reach or hard to find or hard to get to. It's like, that's where all the good stuff has to be, right? Because we can't get to it. That must be where it is. And that's kind of where it all started. Jump back into 1917. There was a feller there named Peter Grayson. Peter was a businessman in this area, and he'd been hearing this whole time about all of these crazy hidden treasures. So, of course, he's got to go check it out, right? So he does. He goes out there with some friends, and they go out there, start digging around, right? So they, anyway, the story goes, of course, it's in Africa, and I'm going to get into some stories later. In fact, I may do those pretty soon, of some animal attacks in the African areas there because of all the old books I have read on hunting and all the old African hunting stories and all of that. Just sounds, it's always been romantic and idealized to me, not so much of the hunting, but just because of the ruggedness. And I don't mean now, I'm talking like back in the 50s and 60s, all the stuff like you see the old movie. Anyway, I'm getting off track. Anyway, forget about all that. So anyhow, this Groot Sling is in Africa. These guys go to look for him. Grayson and his men go not to look for him, go to this cave. Come to find out that just so happens to be where this thing lives. Well, as they're getting in there, finding their way in, a lion comes into camp. I believe it kills a couple. I think it kills one man and pretty much maims another one pretty bad, like really bad. I believe someone else got bit by a snake. Ended up passing away, maybe a spider, but I believe it was a snake. Anyway, as thing goes, I believe, of course, there's probably malaria takes over. Who knows what all went down? But anyway, it pretty much took them out, right? As they went and pushed in and tried to get into this area, it took them out. So the story goes, they ended up, Mr. Grayson refused to pull the plug on the whole deal. So he brings his guys back, goes back out, goes to look, you know, as the story goes, and I believe, like I said, this is, you know, from the way these accounts go, either he found it and returned and then went back to get more. There's a lot of different ways to look at it, but either way, Mr. Grayson did not come back out of this whole deal. And then it was said that he was eaten by the Groot Sling, that he had found the cave, brought his men back, made his way back in there to the cave, went in, and then never came out. And that was the story of the Groot Sling. But when you look at the depictions of it, it looks like a big rampaging elephant with like spikes on its tail and all this, which again, could it be a pocket of dinosaurs? Could it be something along those lines? Could it be something that we had never seen and still have never seen? I guess it could. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility completely, I suppose. There's also another one that, of course, we all love the stories from wartime. When you start looking at the wartime of the cryptids on the battlefield, the ghosts, all the crazy stuff that happened in and around any kind of combat situation. This one, of course, was a reptilian encounter from Vietnam. It says, in 1970, I was serving as a corporal in the U.S. Army, deployed to South Vietnam in a region about 30 miles south of the DMZ. Now, at the time, I was second in command of a squad of soldiers. We had set up a bivouac in a jungle area that had a few steep hills. That evening, my section was ordered to patrol one of the small valleys west of the encampment, so we moved out, led by our sergeant. Well, not long after entering one of the small valleys, we detected movement ahead of us. It seemed to be scattered activity, so we doubted it was VC, but we weren't positive. So we hunkered down for about 15 minutes, getting occasional glimpses of something moving within the trees and the brush. There wasn't enough light to detect what we were observing, even though the moonlight was bright that evening. After a while, the activity halted, so we continued to move slowly through the valley. And as we approached a sheer wall on the hill, it looked like someone or something had stacked large stones or boulders in the pass in front of us. There was also an opening in the hillside that looked like a cave entrance. It was approximately 5 foot high and 3 feet wide, narrowing at the top. When observing the passageway, it appeared to have been cut away by machinery. The edges were smooth and small, even spaced grooves. Now, we were puzzled by this because we'd never seen enemy caves like this, just underground tunnels. The sergeant suggested that it may be a VC supply depot, so we started to assess how we were going to investigate this cave. About this time, that's when things got very strange. We began to notice a putrid odor emanating from the cave entrance. The only thing I can compare it to was rotting eggs and human decay. It was so revolting that a few of the soldiers were becoming ill and started to back away into the jungle, including our sergeant. I was directing a light to the entrance and the door in order to observe anything, but there was a haze that was impossible to see through. We had no idea what was before us. The entire squad took a position in the heavy brush approximately 150 feet from the entrance, far enough not to be detected, but close enough to observe the cave entrance. And we quietly remained there for what seemed like forever. The jungle was strangely calm, though we heard rumbling sounds coming from the distance. It was really quite eerie. The sergeant was sitting near me talking to himself. It was obvious that he was frightened. I was looking at the rest of the squad. Each had wide eyes and scanning the area. No one was going to doze off on this patrol. After several hours, dawn was approaching and it started to lighten up. I checked my watch. It was just before 0500. Just then, we noticed movement in the front of the cave. A being that I first thought was a man moved through the entrance into the clearing in front of the cave. And as it stood up from a crouch, well, it was at least 7 foot tall, and it started to look in our direction. At that time, another similar-looking creature was moving out of the cave. They were making hellish hissing sounds and looking directly at us. Now, the only way I can describe these beings is that they looked like upright lizards. The scaly, shiny skin was very dark, almost black. They had snake-like faces with forward-set eyes that were very large. They had arms and legs like a human, but scaly skin. Now, I didn't notice a tail, though they wore long one-piece, dark green robes, along with a dark cap-like covering on their head. I never noticed if they had anything on their feet. No one gave the order. It seemed like the entire squad opened fire at once. Every piece of vegetation between us and them was quickly sheared away. I yelled out a ceasefire order at the same time I was looking in the direction of the cave. There was nothing there. We immediately checked our flank in case these things circled around us, but there was nothing. As we approached the cave, ready to resume action if needed, it became apparent that these beings had escaped, most likely back into the cave. It was soon decided to set charges and close this entrance. When we returned to camp, we all seemed to be in a daze. There was little discussion of the incident, and we were never debriefed. So I know the sergeant never filed a report. Then again, if he did, it had to have been kept quiet by the brass. So again, y'all, there's another little military story, but a cave. Nonetheless, in Vietnam, holding at least 2 7-foot tall, scaly, reptilian, humanoid monsters, if any other thing, I don't know. This is one of those deals. I don't know why it feels so believable, right? It's in Vietnam. This is back in the day. It's dark. It's creepy. I like that they're dressed. That's something I've always enjoyed whenever you see them, is like they've got these outfits on. So it's not like we don't get stories of Bigfoot wearing outfits, right? We don't get stories of Bigfoot all dressed up. There's no certain clothing or rank and file that Bigfoot follows. Bigfoot's just living his best, but not these. These doggone lizard folk. They're a different level of problem, right? So like I was talking about, we were discussing Africa. Well, now I'm going to bounce over to Zimbabwe. Listen to what was seen in the Dambashawa Caves in Zimbabwe's Mashonaland East Province. Ooh, that is a mouthful. Man, y'all over there in Africa, y'all like to use all the letters. Okay, here we go. This actually took place in 2010. Three individuals who regularly snuck into this area of these caves to drink and hang out. Now, you have to imagine, I'm pretty sure that's probably a pretty good time, right? Imagine living in the woods or being out there and finding a cave, especially if you're Bigfoot or any kind of cryptid that doesn't use fire. It's one thing for us. You can set up in a cave, you'd use fire, you could see light coming out, you could draw other people to it. But if you're cold camping, if you have no need for fire, a cave would even be the most ultimate place to find sanctuary and refuge, right? So you got to think of it there. They're going to be partying. So it says here that one night, as usual, they snuck in and went to their regular drinking spot. Now, this was late in the evening. So they're all sitting around, of course, cussing and discussing, right? Everybody just hanging out. We've all done it. You sit around a campfire, sit around one of those glass tables that everybody has in their backyard, right under their, with their little chairs. And you know what I'm talking about. And everybody's sharing drinks and all this. That's what they're doing. So as they're doing this, the story says that they start to hear laughter coming from brush in these woods right there, right? So initially, they just thought someone was laughing at them. They just ignore it, continue talking. Laughter starts up. This time, it's loud, and it's starting to annoy them. So they turn to look, and as they turn to look, they see green eyes staring back at them. I'm guessing through the dark. The problem was these green eyes were about 7 foot off the ground staring at them. At this moment is when the creature stepped out of the brush, into the moonlight, with the head of a hyena, and black spotted fur is what steps out. They couldn't really see the color of the fur. They said it was lighter. They said it had a hunched back, very lean, muscular structure, and it was standing, yep, on two legs. Now, they didn't notice what the legs were, okay? That's the thing that I find interesting. They didn't notice if it was, you know what I'm saying, like bent backwards. You know, they didn't, none of this crazy stuff, just that's it. And look, I get it. This is what you see. This is it. What they did notice was its hands, because not in its hands, but on its hands were claws, large hooked claws. So I'm sure coming up in Africa, you don't mess with animals, right? You know instantly this is not the place to be. So they took off. Yeah, it roars, makes some sort of screaming sound, and they bounce. They just jet. So it's all in here around this cave. Boom. They said it gave chase. For a short time, they could hear it running, busting brush and all that. They kept going, running. They had no inkling to stop and nothing to even turn around. They said they made all the way to the main road, run down the main road till they made it to a bunch of shops. They got in where there were people. That's when they were like, okay, now we can kind of take a little break. We know it's not right behind us. We're back in civilization, right? And that's where it ended. 7 foot tall hyena man come up out of the cave brush, bounced out on three fellas having some drinks and said, hey, look, y'all are keeping me up from my hyena stuff. I got hyena work to do in the morning. Y'all are going to have to get out of here, break up the party. That's what Hyena Man did. So, again, I don't know why it feels so believable for being in caves, right? But it doesn't just happen over there. It doesn't just happen around the world. It happens here in the U.S. of A., folks. I've got one from Kentucky, right? From Kentucky, beautiful place. If you've never been to Kentucky and you're on the fence about going, go. It is a beautiful part of this country. Very beautiful part. Also, they make Corvettes there. So here we go. It says, my dad says he saw Bigfoot when he was 17 years old. He was hunting in another neighboring rural county, Carter County. Carter County has a place called Carter Caves State Park. Carter Caves is in eastern Kentucky. It's part of a large cave system, a larger one called, that's right, folks, for those that have been there, knows that it, no, Mammoth Caves. So only a small portion of this system's been explored, though it's still huge, or huge. He was on the other side of Carter Caves State Park, just outside of it, not in the park. Probably because you can't hunt in the park, I'm assuming. I've not looked into that, but I'm guessing that's probably why. So he went out about 4 in the morning, 4 a.m. Dawn was approaching and it was getting brighter. just enough to see all the way around him. He was in his little homemade tree stand, laying on his belly, propped up on his elbow. Sounds like he was just resting, right? A little less than half a football field away. I like that. You like how we measure everything, folks? Y'all probably enjoy that aren't American. A football field, right? 100 yards, 300 feet. This says it's 30 to 40 yards is what it was. So I'm guessing that's 10 yards short, right? My math. So he claims that he saw three of these creatures. This dad did. He said one looked like it may have had a baby on its back because he saw a moving lump. They were black or really dark brown. One had bits of gray. Now, he was just inside the tree line that surrounds a large meadow up on top of this ridge. He says deer graze in this area, in this meadow, very early. So the dad said that they were farther in than he was, and the ground was sloping downhill. So one may have looked shorter than the other. He's not sure. So he said he told me two things, and I'll never forget it. First, he said he compared what looked like the larger one to a high school or to the high diving board at the pool, and it was about 3 foot taller than that, and the high dive was a standard 10 feet. Now, I'm going to stop, folks. They've already laid out there the fact that it was sloping downhill, so we know size could be off. I'm not saying this thing wasn't a 10-footer, but I'm saying, hey, look, that's going to be one of those deals, right? I don't know why. Why do we feel... I don't know why I feel this way. Why do I feel like once it breaks about 8 feet, I'm like, nah, you're getting out there on a limb. But maybe so, right? I don't know. Maybe so. We're just saying you've already made it clear that things might have been a little off, a little askew from your vantage point. So anyway, so y'all take that in consideration. He also said the other thing was that they acted like humans. Said they didn't make any verbal sounds, but it was like he was watching people and not animals. Now, we've all heard that a lot. He mentioned that he watched them for about a minute. I asked him if they looked at him or knew he was there, and he said he didn't know. He said for something that big, though, what was so creepy was they were so quiet. I can speak on that. If any of y'all spend any time in the outdoors, especially elk hunting, you'll be surprised how something that weighs 800 pounds plus can move around in the woods that quietly with the headgear, all of this stuff. It's surprising. So imagine seeing something that big and that quiet. It is unsettling when you're like, man, there's no noise. So he says he didn't hear much, and after it was all over, he didn't hear anything else. He said it could have been all that he could hear because his heart was beating so fast and the rush in his ears from fear. I'm like, do I get that too? He later went back to the spot where he had saw them and looked at the surrounding trees to try to determine the height. Then he went back again with his brothers. This was in the early 70s. Now, I've been to the area as well. I tried to go back some years later, but my dad said the property was passed down to a granddaughter of his acquaintance, the property owner, and he wouldn't drive up there to ask. He said it was like they were people. It's what always intrigued me. Now, my father passed in 2014. I'd love to hear this story one more time. He only shared it with one other person after he was older. I always wondered when I visit the caves if they live deep down inside them, if they know all these easy secret ways to enter them. And I always wondered if they knew he was there in that tree stand all along. I really enjoyed that story, but again with the cave systems. If you look in the history of caves and caves that how they were found, a lot of them were found by little holes, right? A lot of them were found by entrances, maybe not much bigger than a tire, you know, not sometimes even smaller where you could barely squeeze in. And then you end up, it opens up into bigger areas and then you find larger entrances and then you find, oh, they were connected. It does make you wonder, how many of these entrances do we not know about? Are we completely unaware because they're small, because of where they're at up in the woods, in the mountainous areas? And these creatures may know. Ideally, they may know ways to slip off, and that might lead to some of the ways that they vanish. Maybe as they're being led in and out of areas, or our people see them, and maybe they're slipping in there and run behind a tree and move a rock, slide down, move the rock back over. Just looks like a rock behind a tree, right? In reality, that's the entrance to their cave. Here's one that took place in Alabama in 1993 in Limerock, Alabama. Says there were, I think, six of us in our group. Cave entrances in the southeast are usually formed at the contact between the sandstone cap and the limestone layer beneath it. So we normally hike in from the bottom of the mountain. then contour around the hillside at the sandstone-limestone contact until we've reached the cave. On this particular trip, the cove was fairly remote, and there wasn't good access to the hillside from the bottom, so we'd gone in from the top, leaving our trucks off the road on the ridgeline. I'm assuming this cove was supposed to be cave. We'd only just begun contouring around the hillside when we found two oddities. A sapling, 9 inches in circumference, because we measured it, that was broken 6 foot up the trunk. The top part of the sapling had been twisted around 360 degrees, and the top was pointing downhill. I'm going to stop right there. I've seen this. I've seen this on several different places. Now, I've always been told it's Bigfoot stuff, but like we've always said, like I've not ever had anything cool like that happen. But I've seen trees done like this. Maybe not quite that big. I don't know, 9 inches. Yeah, maybe. But I've seen several trees in a few different spots. One up in Jack County. I know a place in Jack County that I've seen them. I know a place in Parker County. Here in Parker County, I've seen them in two different spots, trees done like that. I know they say it's Bigfoot. I personally always thought it was, you know, maybe wind, tornado might have come through this area, like hit our deer lease out here. So I don't know. But it is an interesting thing whenever you find this. But it says the break. Now, here's interesting. The break was so fresh, the wood was still green and looked wet with sap. About 10 foot directly uphill was a little teepee about 14 inches tall made out of sticks. So many sticks had been used that the walls were nearly solid. We stopped and considered these oddities for a bit. Now, again, folks, there's that teepee business where when we talk about kids that have gone missing with the missing 411, where they say they were taken by like the monkey people or a bear carried me and all this. There have been reports of them living in these little teepee stick shelters, too. Strange that it's only 14 inches tall. Man, that is one strong gnome, right? Yeah, crazy. It says, here we go. Opinions of their origin ranged from a Bigfoot did it, which was my opinion, to a crazy wind vortex that didn't move anything else near the sapling, including the leaves beneath it, and maybe a little kid was miles from the nearest home decided to make a doll-sized teepee in the woods. We also noticed that there were large areas in which every sapling and bush was arched over, with the arches all pointing downhill. Now, this is also associated with Bigfoot, it says here. But there were so many of them that I suspect it was something more along the lines of wind and ice, or a really, really, really obsessive, compulsive Bigfoot. Now, that would be something, right? So as we hiked, we began to hear wood knocking pacing us. If you've never heard it, it sounds like an axe hitting a tree. And it's always two knocks, always about 100 foot uphill from us. Ooh, there we go. About every 5 minutes, we'd hear the crack, crash, and thump of a tree falling just on the other side of the ridgeline, always directly uphill from us. He had the high ground. It's not uncommon for us to hear the sound of wood knocking, always two above us, sometimes on other trips. Three knocks would answer the two from across a cove or down a hillside. A tree crashing, pacing us when we hiked to caves. Now, I remember once hearing it on three different hillsides in one weekend. It's always directly uphill from us, keeping pace with us. Anyway, as I said, we hear it pretty frequently, so, as always, we just ignore it and continue hiking. All was fine until one of the guys in the group shoved over a dead, rotted tree stump about 8 foot tall. Within seconds of the dead tree hitting the ground, it sounded like all hell breaking loose up above us on the hillside as trees started falling one after another after another. For the next 5 minutes, it was a continuous crack, crash, boom, crack, crash, boom. Man, that sounds like it's in a song. We stood there, stunned. Even the Bigfoot non-believers had fear in their eyes, and we nervously acknowledged to one another that we had seriously ticked off something up there. So we decided we'd better get moving and hiked at a much more rapid pace to the cave. Now, this sounds like a bad idea, don't it? For the rest of the hike, we were pelted with dirt and pebbles and occasionally smallish rocks. The cave had a pit entrance, and I've never been so worried that something was going to mess with our ropes. Upon exiting the cave after about 5 hours later, We found our ropes and the gear we'd left outside the cave untouched. We didn't hear anything unusual on the hike back to the trucks, but then we never hear this stuff hiking back to the vehicles. We only hear it hiking to the caves. I think the knocking is a sentinel signaling to the other Bigfoot the location of strangers. The tree crashing is almost certainly a threat display. I've often wondered why we hear the knocking and tree crashing so often on caving trips and rarely on other types of hikes. I suspect part of it is that we aren't armed, so they don't feel they need to hide as completely. Also, my group always hiked unusually fast, and a group of people with ropes and packs marching purposely through their territory might cause alert to the rest of their group. The knocking always comes from above us on the hillside, and I think it makes them cranky if we surprise them by hiking in from above. In both this incident and the one where something threw large rocks at us and followed us, bellowing into a cave, we had hiked in from above instead of hiking up the mountain from the bottom. So that's it. Maybe, just maybe, they're onto something. So maybe that's it. Maybe there are other entrances, there are sentinels, and that's the way it's operating. That's the way they're keeping an eye out on things, and just like that, when you come up from the bottom, if you're in there at the top, you can see down. Depending on the time of day with the thermals, maybe they can smell them easier as the wind's coming up the hill, right? Who knows? But apparently coming in from the top does aggravate these hairy hominids. Folks, let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll pick Mr. Filson's brain about some of this cave activity. And then I've got some more to share, I believe, on the Elite Show. I've got some more of this and some more of some of those crazy, creepy barn encounters, folks. Let's take a quick break. We get back, we'll have a little more fun. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we are back.
Yes.
More creepy cave talk. Look, I'm going to share you something with y'all. And y'all have known, I've talked about this in the past. I had some cousins that lived in Georgia years and years ago. And after my eighth grade year, after junior high, before freshman year, I went and stayed up there for a month in Georgia. And it was in the mountainous areas there, and it was beautiful, but it was a very odd and eerie thing. And we saw plantations, we saw all of this stuff. It was a very, it's an odd feeling not growing up in that area, right? As you go to see all that. But while we were there, we found a little entrance to a cave, and it wasn't real big. But when I say little one, I mean like it was maybe the size of, let's see, like a spare tire, like I always told you, like a little hole like that. And you could feel the air, and you couldn't get in it more than like 3 foot, right? You could just kind of, because the way it was kind of, I guess, collapsed in and just the way it was built. But you could tell that it went really deep down in there. And I'd forgotten about it until, you know, doing this whole thing. But it always, till this story too, but it always makes me think, how many of those are out there that we don't know about? Little entrances, like I say, that's tucked in there behind some rocks or up in there behind a little group of trees or under some brush, that if you know it's there, it's easy to access. It's easy to get in and out. It's an easy way to vanish. And if you're not going in and out of there and it's not a well-beaten, well-worn area, it's just more like an emergency place, right? Like, yeah. I just disappear off in there. It always makes me think of that, as we brought up, when people go missing. What could be living in there? Of course, people could fall in these spots. I know up in the mountainous areas of Colorado, and I'm sure in California and all that, they end up plugging a lot of the mines, and there's a lot of vent holes and stuff, you know, that they have to, because you could easily fall in them, things like that.
Yeah, lots of serial killers, like, actually throw bodies in those holes. Because
that's Kyle Filson, folks. That's
no,
Kyle
I've read Filson. Stories. He's, I've read several books on the subject
make
matter.
Make sure you. This is good thing. This is recorded, so when they come for him, we'll be able to use this as evidence.
Well, they do lots of things. They throw bodies in vats of 55-gallon drums of acid. There's lots of ways they feed them to pigs.
See,
there's
look,
lots
here
of
we
things
go.
You can
here
do.
We go.
Take them out in the ocean. I mean, the ocean's a big place, folks. All you need is a cinder block and some chain.
Jeez, listen to this guy.
Right? You've been crabbing. You throw a chicken in there in the cage, and you throw it in the water. You come back the next day. You got 35 blue crabs in there.
Catching crawfish on a piece of bacon and a string, right?
Yeah, like that's what turkey necks and stuff like that.
Right. So it just always makes me think, like, out of all the areas up there in all this part of in Appalachia or any of these mountainous areas, the caves are in and around there, there's a chance that maybe that is. And people have already done it where they have taken all the cave systems of North America and the map of the missing persons, like out of missing 411 or anything, right. And you overlay them. there's a lot of it in the same areas.
I agree. I've seen similar diagrams like that, and you're right. And
strange.
The cave system is so vast that like hardly any of it is explored. Like we always talk about, we know more about space than we do the deep ocean, than we do about the cave systems, and that's just here in this country. I'm talking about the cave systems that we visited as kids, like Carlsbad and stuff like that. But there's cave systems all over the world, and who knows what's living in there. I mean,
that's it. And it's, I know it's, we always, it's all speculation, right? That's everybody listening to this. It's one of those romantic ideas. But if I was going to be a man eating monster, that's where I would hide, especially in this heat.
I like the cool stories of like the inner earth, you know, where there's a whole world in there and a jungle and another sun and stuff. I mean, like, I don't believe any of it, but I like those stories. I think they're cool.
Great. It's great.
Have you seen, there's one massive cave, I think it's in Vietnam, and like over, the top of it collapsed, you know, thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
And now the jungle that's surrounding it has taken over, and now there's like a forest in the cave.
Yes.
Because of the collapsed
ceiling.
And
then there's stuff growing in there that doesn't normally grow in like other forests or other rainforest areas or something.
It has like its own biosphere down there, like
that's
its
so
own
cool.
micro environment. You know, it's like going into a conservatory or a greenhouse, if you will. It's got its own climate. It's got, you know, insects that you don't find anywhere else, but there it's like really strange.
That's cool.
I like that stuff when you go. Like, we were in Mexico. I want to say, what was the name of that? Playa del Carmen or something. And there's these cenotes, which are basically underground caverns, but there's water in them. You have to put like a life vest on and swim through the caverns.
Nope.
I did it one time. It was really cool. I don't know if they even open that to the public anymore. Because also when I was younger, you could climb up Chichen Itza, and now they won't let you do that.
Did you hide a body in that cave?
No, I did not. I did not. Okay. Well, I was with a big group of people, so they would have seen me.
Oh, that's a good point.
But I remember at one point that the tour guide takes you through. You swim through this tunnel system.
No.
And they turn the lights off, and I mean, it's blacker than black. And you can, and they gave you these like underwater flashlights, and it's, I mean, clear water as you can get. And so it was really pretty cool, but it was kind of creepy at the same time.
No, it's very, very creepy.
But then, you know, that, of course, when I was in my 20s, that sounds like fun, right? Because when you're fearless when you're in your 20s, right?
Yes, yes.
Now, after watching those like kids get trapped in that underwater cave in Vietnam where the SEALs had to go get them, I'm like, that could have happened to me. I was underground in a cave system in water.
They wouldn't have helped you.
I would never do that now.
They would have rescued you. They'd have just been like, we lost that guy.
Yeah.
No, that guy's not there. Hey, we were laughing about this when I brought up a little bit. Did you know that there are eucalyptus plantations? Like giant orchards of eucalyptus.
In Australia?
No. In Brazil.
Oh, no. I wasn't aware of eucalyptus.
Me either.
In Brazil. I know they're in Australia because that's what koalas eat.
Yeah.
And I heard that they're real cantankerous little things. Like, they look cute, but like, if they don't have some eucalyptus, and I mean quick, they get real on.
Yeah, they're like permastoned with like STDs. That's all like the koala bears are.
I've never seen one. At a zoo or anything.
I think they
like
got the syphilis.
I don't know, but I've heard that they're like real, they're ornery.
Yes.
I've heard that. If you keep feeding them, they're cool.
Man, I don't.
But they're like junkies, like you said, for eucalyptus. And if they run out, they start getting mean and
violent.
What's
that one that shows that it's wet, like when it was soaking wet or whatever, that just looks terrifying? Man, I hope that thing was a joke. Listen to this, though. Look, Lon posted this up, and y'all know I cannot pass up a good headline. Y'all know this. Human-like, here you go, Philly. Human-like lichen. Encountered in Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Okay.
Eucalyptus plantation.
Okay.
They were probably out there doing a little jiu-jitsu. Here we go. Listen to this. It says, my father likes to frequent the sports club of the local university where he teaches to run and exercise. It's a large sports area with swimming pools, soccer, and basketball fields. Now, this is Brazilian, so I can't believe they said soccer, et cetera.
Football is
That's
what they
right.
call it.
Says he still goes there every now and then. This place is at the exit to the next town and close to where we live in the state of Sao Paulo, Brazil. He goes there walking and cuts the way along a trail that goes up a ravine, passing beside a large eucalyptus plantation. Now, through this shortcut, you can avoid walking half a kilometer uphill to the main entrance. And a lot of people use this shortcut, including the local employees. So one day he went for a run a little later than usual at around 6:30 p.m. About an hour later, the sun was already gone, and with just a few more minutes of light of daylight left, he was exhausted, so he decided to return by the same shortcut as usual, which would not be much of a problem since the full moon was high in the sky. Here we go, Philly. Here we got werewolves.
Yep.
When he reached the edge of the woods, he noticed a figure in the middle of the trees that looked like a horse inside the eucalyptus enclosure. He first ignored it and kept walking, thinking if he should try to communicate with someone about it. Mind that this place is surrounded by farmers that all own horses. So he kept walking, but started to feel eerie as if someone was watching him. The feeling soon became stronger, and a few more steps he realized that the horse was walking alongside him. So he looked again between the trees, and he saw that it was behind a tree. And he thought, well, that's strange. Why is a horse hiding? Also, it managed to stand facing the tree between them. He just shook it off and continued along the trail. A standing horse?
Well, it's standing on four legs, I'm assuming.
Let's hope.
I mean, is it standing on two legs?
I hope so. He was already halfway down, but the unsettling fear was increasing, so he looked at the horse again. And as his eyes adjusted to the darkness...
He said, that's not a horse, that's Husamar Pahari.
That's right. He's coming for you. He could see a little better. Now it didn't really look like a horse, because he saw the animal jump from behind a tree to another. By the way it jumped, it seemed to be very tall and a very strong person. He stopped in shock and stared at the animal, still behind the tree, and noticed something swinging. What he previously thought was the horse's tail now looked like a man wearing a long coat. But the darkness and shadows of the branches were too confusing to figure it out. Stop laughing, because I knew what you were thinking. Keep going. He decided to ignore it and move on. That's my move all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Forget it, just keep going. Thinking that it was maybe just his imagination. And we've covered this with the shadows and things where you can just believe all kinds of stuff when you're getting freaked out, right? So he kept on track. But at the end of the trail, there's a point where this path and his path and that the animal's on and his are going to cross each other. So he gets a little freaked out, decides to go back to the field and go back to the main road. So he starts walking back. Dude, stop already. So he's paying close attention to this animal. He even thought that it could be just a friend of his trying to scare him. So going back towards the field where the lights are on now, he could better see its silhouette. A massive, muscular thing, hunched back, apparently covered in thick fur, and what seemed like pointy ears in its head.
It's Hanato Sobral.
It's Babalu. That's it. Babalu, that's a chewing gum in Brazil. So he stopped in disbelief, but the creature kept walking towards him, not worrying much about hiding anymore. That's when his blood ran cold. It was Buchecha. No, the animal was approaching from the side as if it wanted to trap him there.
Yeah.
He tried not to run in order to display confidence and avoid attention. So he fast walked back towards the field, distancing from the trail where he took a last glance. The animal was there, still, lowered in a bush on all fours like a gorilla. It looked like a huge human dog. When they were about 100 meters apart, my father ran to the main entrance at the avenue and was relieved to see that the animal didn't follow. He came back by the avenue, still on high alert, and almost messed himself. Now, every time he goes there, he makes sure that he doesn't stay out past dark.
I don't blame him.
So, I'm not surprised by this in Brazil.
Oh, no. I mean, makes me Amazon is right there.
Yeah, but it makes me think of shamans.
Yeah.
Anytime you think about all this stuff down there, what are they, brujas? Isn't that what's down there?
Yeah.
Like some sort of witches and whatnot? That's what it makes me think of. So, look, if our natives can have skinwalkers here, right, and we know the shamans, all of this stuff, could be the same thing down there. Like we used to talk about, you and I used to laugh about when they talked about doing the ayahuasca. Like those are the good shamans. There's got to be some bad shamans.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There has to be. Maybe that's what this is. Some poor fella chased by what he thought was nothing more than a friend of his turned out to be maybe a big wolf man in Sao Paulo.
That is creepy. But you're right. Being in the Amazon like that, there's nothing that would surprise me living in there. Maybe it was a giant hairy ape that's undiscovered. You know, maybe
yeah.
It wasn't a dog.
Maybe
man.
It's a giant.
I mean, he said it was dark. I mean,
yeah. A giant
still,
sloth.
I've been jogging before when it's close to dark, and I've never mistaken a werewolf, you know, crouched in the bush.
This was a long time ago.
This was a long time ago.
Jogging, folks. He
was
doesn't
a long
jog.
Time
it's
ago.
Probably
now,
at least 25, 30 years ago.
Hey, no, come on. Now I speed walk. I got the like leg weights, and I got the little dumbbells in my hands.
His hips move real quick. Yeah. Oh, he's cooking. He wears those real short shorts. He's cooking down the road, swinging his weights.
I like that. Speaking of things I like cryptid conferences. Word. Don't forget about the Paranormal Roundtable's second annual Dogman Cryptid Conference that me and Cam are going to be at. It's going to be held in beautiful White Settlement, Texas, at the convention center there. That's basically West Fort Worth.
Yeah.
September 2nd and September 3rd, we're going to be there. Go online. You can Google Paranormal Roundtable's second annual Dogman Cryptid Conference, or you can go to the show notes. I'll put links in there, and you can buy your tickets, and you can meet up with me and Cam, as well as meet a lot of your other heroes, like Lyle Blackburn.
The Three Amigos.
Nick Redfern. Ken Gerhardt, that's right, you threw me off. There's going to be Josh Turner there.
Josh
David
will be there.
David Weatherly's going to be there. Christopher Garantano, Ron Moorhead. There's going to be a lot of people.
Speaking of Weatherly, he's got another book coming out just of all the cryptids in the Lone Star State.
Oh, I know. He's been doing that series state by state.
Yeah.
And we've got several of them, but I'd like to have the whole
all
50 states and Puerto Rico, right?
We're going to have to get him. Yeah, we'll talk to him there in a few weeks, and we'll get him to pop on and talk to it about there. So, yeah, if y'all want to get the new books or any, I'm sure it's all going to be there. It'll be a good time. We need to talk to Ron. We need to get him to come on, talk about those Sierra sounds.
Yeah, right.
Dude, that stuff's still crazy to me,
I
man.
Love those
I do
the sounds
too.
Of that. Because if he did invent that, what an amazing idea.
Right? That dude, I got to talk to him. It's just going to be fun all the way around.
Yeah, it
just
is.
Just a good, fun time. So, yeah, I'd urge everybody, if you within driving distance, wheel down, hang out.
Yep, it's going to be a fun time.
And if you want to find good places to eat, holler at us. We'll point you in the right direction. You can tell me and Kyle don't miss a meal.
Yeah, the White Settlement is really close to River Oaks. And in River Oaks, there's Heim Barbecue. I'm telling you.
And you also, we could go around the back way and go to Joe T's.
And Joe T. Garcia's. Can't go wrong.
Fajitas
Speaking
all day.
Speaking of can't go wrong, you can't go wrong with sending us a story. If you have a story you want to share with me and Cam and the listeners, email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show, 888-393-2783, and we would love to hear about it. Let's not forget about our wonderful sponsor, AG1. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D and five free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Just go to drinkag1.com/expanded. That's drinkag1.com/expanded. Cam, I know you're getting ready to go out of town soon. What do you got planned for the rest of your week?
You know what? I don't. I've got a bunch of stuff that I've got to do, so I don't really know. I haven't broken down my itinerary of things that I need to get done this whole time. But, excuse me, y'all, I did finish working over there and helping getting my niece's house up and going. I got all that done. I've recovered about 85%, I guess you could say. So I'm not dying yet as of all that. So we're better. Everything's good.
I've got an injury I recently suffered just being a dummy. I was walking outside to check on the grill, and I was barefoot, and I kicked the snot out of a metal chair with my pinky toe on my right foot.
Did you break it?
I don't think it's broken, but boy, it hurts.
How many toes have you broke? I broke almost all of them.
Oh, yeah, I've broken lots. Mostly doing dumb stuff like that, kicking stuff.
And soccer. You broke a lot in soccer.
When I was younger, yeah. Yeah, of course.
I figured you broke it on that one this time.
No.
I got one of them that doesn't look real good at all. I got one I broke a couple times, and it does not look good.
But let's hope that we don't break anything, and hope everybody out there doesn't
break
anything.
If you're going to break anything, a toe is the best thing.
Yeah, your nose.
Right?
They don't really do anything with the nose.
You don't need yours broken.
No, but I mean, it's not really that bad. You get black eyes, but it's not a joint that moves.
Yeah,
and you know, like your foot, you're standing on it. That's how I notice.
Yours looks
it.
Like it has a joint in it, bro.
It does. Well, it's been broken 7 times. Yeah. Let's not talk about that. All right, folks, that's about all the time we have on this episode. Till next time, stay safe. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.